Our next presentation is Stink Bug Distribution and Reproductive Capacity in Georgia Cotton Farmscapes by John Herbert.
All right, thanks for being here so late on a day when the ice is coming and there's an important football game tonight. So some of my slides you've probably already seen today if you've seen some other talks, but we'll go through them. So we know that stink bugs are causing a major problem in the southeast. They damage the bolls by feeding on them. And if you, now I'll just use my pointer. If you look here, you'll see a nice clean boll. And then here's an older boll that's been damaged. You'll see warts on it. And later on in the year, this is boll was about ready to break open. You can see punctures that don't have warts, and those correspond with stains on the lint. And here's where it's fed on a seed. One of the problems that we have is that stink bugs are aggregated in their distribution, and as Glenn and Jeremy mentioned, they like to get on these borders between peanut and cotton, and this is extremely common in Georgia that you'll have a pivot like this. It's the field we sampled last year where half of it's peanut and half of it's cotton. One of the things I'll tell you about my maps is these maps are not interpolated. These are diameters in meters that you can match up on the legend, and that is how many stink bugs were measured at that specific point. The species that we deal with the most are Acrosternum hilar, the green stink bug, the brown stink bug, Euschistus cervus, and the southern green stink bug, Nazara virigula. And the green stink bug seems to be a little bit more of a problem towards the northern part of the state. We don't see a lot of them in the Tifton area. The brown stink bug's all over the place, and by far the southern greens are most abundant. One of the things I wanted to do, being kind of new on the scene here, was just to look at some basic spatial and temporal distribution questions. And one of the things that popped up during this is this idea of reproductive capacity. So if we know the temporal and the spatial distribution of these bugs, what are they doing in these different crops? So I got a plot design that I kind of inherited, and this is a good way to look at some of the spatial interactions between these farmscapes. As Glenn mentioned, we have peanut, cotton, corn, and soybean. They are very commonly grown in association with each other in Georgia. And the way our plots were set up is we have three locations, and each location has a different size plot. They're between 4 and 7 acres, and what we do is we have peanuts and cotton down the outsides of the plot, and then cotton and soybean in the middle, and this is replicated. The sample sizes, we either get 12 in each one or 10, depending on the width of the plot that we get assigned that year. We don't have a whole lot of control over some of this. The way we sampled the peanuts, the cotton, and the soybeans was with sweep net sampling. The corn sampling was done by measuring 10 consecutive plants. I'm not going to talk about the corn today, but because by the time we got stink bugs in the peanuts, cotton, and soybean, they were completely gone from corn. But what we would do is we would do it with three rows in between sampling locations. So if we come in on one day and we sample this orange tract, we would take 10 samples here, another 10 after the flag, go over here, 10 samples here, and 10 samples here for a total of 40 sweeps. And this was single row sampling. The samples were then placed into a plastic bag. We brought them back to the lab, stuck them in the freezer, and then the next day I went and identified all the adults and the nymphs to species. I also, at this time, took the adults and put them underneath a 1% salt solution and dissected them in order to look at whether they were parasitized and what their reproductive organs looked like. And I rated them on a scale from 0 to 3. 3 only applies to females because this is a condition where the eggs are black and necrotic inside the ovaries, and it's pretty obvious. So we have individuals that are completely non-reproductive. The male's testes are not developed. The accessory gland is clear or greenish in color and not developed either. We have an intermediate stage where the females have eggs inside of them, but they don't have a well-developed chorion, and they're not gravid. They cannot oviposit those eggs and have them be viable. And the males at this point have a little bit of development of the accessory gland, and the testes appear to be developed at this point. And we also have this reproductive phase where the females are gravid, the eggs have a very well-developed chorion. If you squeeze them with forceps, they pop, and you can actually see the crown around the top of the egg. And the males have completely developed ovaries. Their accessory gland is very well developed. In this picture here, this is a male, and you start finding really interesting things when you take these apart. This is a very well-developed orange-colored testis. This is its accessory gland. This is completely fully mature. It's nice and white. Underneath there, there's sacs that are full of sperm and seminal fluid. And in here, this is a parasitoid. This is a fly larva. And this is a second fly larva right next to it. So these do get parasitized by multiple larvae. However, from what most of the people who've reared these out tell me, only one of these comes out. So this could be an interesting question later on what happens. When we look at what's going on inside of our different crops in our different places, it's not a surprise. They really like soybeans, and that's the most influential that we have in our environment. And this persists in Plains and in Tifton, followed by cotton, and then by peanut. And right here we had a little bit in corn at the very beginning when we started sampling, and then they completely dropped out, as Glenn showed in her phenology stuff as well. When we look at the species composition, we see that in soybean and cotton, the major species playing here is the southern green stink bug, which is in the yellow here. And it's followed by the brown, and then the green stink bug is minor. But when we look at peanut, we get a little bit more similar in their distribution. So we have southern greens and brown stink bugs contributing more equally in peanuts than we do in soybean and cotton. One of the other things I'm looking at with all of this is this spatial component. And this is our map in Midville, and you can see that on the 24th of August, we've got some in pretty much everything except for the corn. And then this is one of our peaks on our map where we have a lot in soybean, a lot in cotton, and they're moving from the peanut. And then this is our big peak at the end of the year that was on that phenology slide, and they're all hanging out in soybean, not very many in cotton, and pretty much absent from peanut at this point. So one of the things I thought about when I was looking at this data was I know what reproductive status they're in. So if you look at those peaks back on this other map, and you see we have a peak on the 1st and a big peak on the 13th. Well, we also have a big peak of non-reproductives on both of those dates in the same place. And so there's only two ways this can happen. One, they're migrating into it, or these are nymphs that are coming off inside of the crop, and then they steadily start to decline. One of the things I want you to notice, though, is this intermediate stage. So we have this peak, and we have some intermediates. And we have a peak, and we have a few intermediates down in the cotton. Not very many in the peanut, although there's not very many in the peanut to begin with. And these are southern green stink bugs. We see the same thing in plains. We see these huge peaks where we have the non-reproductives coming off. And we have some intermediates present in cotton and soybean, and no intermediates at all that were found in the peanut. When we look at the brown stink bug, it's a little different. We still have these peaks at the end of the year of these non-reproductives, but we have a lot of intermediates, much more intermediates than what we saw in the southern green stink bugs, and especially here in the peanut. Unfortunately, in plains, this isn't exactly adding up the same way that it did in Midville, but we have almost no bugs in peanuts in plains. And in fact, this is just the female data, so we actually have more males in peanuts than we do females in plains, which is an interesting thing to look at. But in cotton and soybean, we still have these big peaks of zeros, non-reproductives, that we don't see in peanuts in any of the locations. So really, the interesting thing about this for me is that we have these asynchronous phenology is going on between these two species. So these two species could definitely be doing something different in these different crops. And we really need to try to understand what they're doing in these different crops if we want to use ecologically friendly techniques to deal with them. The fact that mature females of the brown stink bug are very hard to find after September is interesting. So they could all be shutting down. There's reports that they're bivolting. So this could indicate that there's some obligate shutdown going on at this point that we may be able to take advantage of also. The spatial differences, the fact that we don't necessarily see them peaking in crops at the same time in the same place, we don't really know whether these species are antagonistic or not. And of course, these reproductive differences as well. These species are in different reproductive stages at different times. So really, we still need to get into this spatiotemporal movement question. These edge effects, this peanut interface is very interesting. And the other thing is that when we look at those data, though, we have to consider these non-reproductives or what the reproductive state is so that we can say whether these insects are moving into a crop or whether they're being born within the crop. And I think that that's a very important question to answer in this. And that gets into this whole movement versus reproduction question. Our species compositions are important, and so is our reproductive status. And I threw this in here because this is what happens in plains if you do nothing to control stink bugs and cotton. This is what your cotton looks like. And if you want to look at what it looks like from a cross section, this is where your peanuts are, and this is where your corn is. So nothing next to the peanuts, and as you go away from peanuts, you get more and more cotton. I'll take any questions.